listening to the NarniaWeb.com podcast, and I'm your host, Julian. To the Narnia Web Council. We are back again. We're ready for another analysis of Prince Caspian. And I'm going to try to make sure that from now on the podcasts are a little shorter. So this one we won't discuss quite as much today because we'll not go for 50 minutes or so. We're going to go kind of recorded an hour long session or so, but basically cut it in half. So anyway, let's go ahead and get started. Anyway, everyone saw Wally. Good. And don't see Hancock, please. I'm glad I got to see it for free and didn't have to pay money for it, because I would have felt guilty thinking about children in Africa when I think of the money I spent for movies like Hancock. I would have spent for Hancock. And whenever I think of movies like Beowulf, I think, wow, I that money could have gone to Prince Caspian again.
Beverly Hills Chihuahua.
Oh, don't talk about
that. Oh, no!
Actually, okay.
Somebody hit me.
Down to business. We are going to spend the next hour or so, well, 30 minutes for part one here.
That should have been the first thing we talked about. We should have analyzed the Chihuahua.
No, we're going to spend the next... We're going to actually get down to business. We're going to discuss the VH1 commercial starting now.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm getting... There's a lot of cutting in and out of this right now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So just be aware, be aware if I suddenly... change topics, or seem to not know what is being discussed, or change
they
movies.
They will just ignore you.
That's cause, right. If I suddenly start analyzing Hancock,
I thought that scene was,
Okay.
Yeah, enough with the Hancock.
So, we're going to pick up where we left off. Good to have everyone back. Jim Fan, Glum Puddle, and Warrior for Jesus. Good to have you guys. Sorry that some of you missed out on some good discussion. But that's how life goes.
For you.
Yeah. I think Glumfuddle's just fuming right now that he missed out on the last one. He's not even saying anything.
Oh, okay. I'm expected to talk. Okay. Are we recording right now,
by the way?
We've
been recording the whole time.
Oh, okay. So even our discussions about Hancock?
Yeah, I just thought, I'll just play it safe.
Save that.
Okay.
Blanket.
Okay, go see Wally. Anyway, it was kind of hard for me to sit for the last podcast because there were a lot of things I was listening to that were like, oh, I want to say this. I want to make this point. And so, but now I am ready for this.
Now you're ready. And real quick, do you want to just scream out what you thought of Reaper Cheap overall, that he was awesome?
I love Reaper Cheap. There we go. In a nutshell.
Good.
Woo!
Narnia in a nutshell. Okay.
It's where I'm at the tone brain.
All right, so right now we are at the scene where Glazel forced to lie, I think is how it's put down. I wouldn't have actually chosen that title, but...
All right, here's the first thing I want. I chose that title, so what exactly are you? Are your
problems? I was
going
to say
really?
Glazel forced to kill three of his henchmen, but...
I didn't get that the first time I saw that. I didn't get that, and someone had to explain to me, Mira's told him to kill those three guys. I didn't get that the first time around. I don't know why.
He tells him to kill those three guys? What do you mean?
That was what I took from it. Isn't that the point?
I didn't get that. I didn't get that at all.
Oh, okay. So he asks him, how many men? He says, General, how many? And then he says, three. And then he takes the sword and he turns around and looks at the three men standing behind him.
Because the first
I have a different interpretation. I just think all Glazel was saying is he was lying about, these many men were killed. These many men were killed or whatever. When he looks back, I think he's feeling the pressure of, Miraz is telling him to do one thing, and he realizes, his soldiers are watching and they know what's going on. They know that, he's being pressured to lie, and is he going to do it or not? So it's kind of like he's. Lying knowingly in front of his troops, and he feels bad about that. I didn't get the impression at all that, because he says, how many were killed, and he pauses for a while, and he just makes up a number and says three.
Okay, Jim Fan, what did you think? Was that the interpretation you got?
First time around I saw it, I thought that people had been killed, but he didn't say anything to Miraz, and then he, you know, after he hits him, he's, you know, finally spits it out. But after I've seen it a couple times, I do think that, you know, because the Narnians came, they did their job very quietly, and they didn't, and the Telmarines were completely caught off guard. They didn't know anything about it. So when Miraz comes and he's like, so how many men were killed? Okay, no one was killed. It wasn't any. Well, what about your injuries? He's like, kind of like, what injuries? And it's like Miraz is looking for an excuse, something that would get the country riled up enough that would make them really mad at the Narnians to support a war, to support Miraz becoming king. So he basically is making General Gozel make casualties and make it seem like this was a, you know, a bad attack and people died, you know, so, as proof, because no one was going to believe him just on hearsay, I don't think. Because you see, Gozel was very reluctant, and then he, you know, looks around and, you know, there's three guys standing behind him, so, you know, I got the impression
that there are... We're sure there are three guys?
Yeah, there were three guys.
Yeah.
Definitely three? Okay, that's... I never got that at all.
I just
always felt like he was being...
Just the look that Gozel had on his
pressure
face.
To make up a story.
Warrior, what did you think? I mean, maybe I completely missed it.
I think pretty similar to Jinpan. I thought this scene added a little bit of depth to Miraz and his men. A bit of character development, you might say. And I just like it was really well acted.
Very well acted.
I think it was probably one of my favorite conversation pieces in the actual movie.
I guess I just thought
it was just very, like, very menacing. Like Miraz was very menacing. I don't make
yeah,
movie.
A lot is communicated without actually.
That actually speaking.
Actually, I guess I just
his eyes are just so expressive.
I just thought that he would kill the guys, maybe like you said, to anger the people, but he wanted, you know, some bodies. And I thought the fact that there was just three guys standing right behind Gozel, and he said, how many? And he says three. I just thought, oh, he's going to make Gozel kill these guys. That's just what occurred to me. Maybe I was completely wrong.
I think if that's the case, I don't like the scene as much anymore because it seems really cheesy. Like it's at the very end when he kind of looks back at them. You know, he's got the bloody lip and he kind of looks back at them like, oh no, I've got to go kill them. I think the scene comes across as really cheesy. So I'm going to go ahead and stick with my original view that he was just forced to lie because I think it makes it a much better
scene. Let me ask Sergio or Andrew what's going on if we ever get to meet them.
Maybe they'll say they'll probably say something about it in the commentary, but if they don't,
don't worry, when the DVD comes out we'll do this all over again.
I'm looking forward to the Blu-ray.
I have to say I really like Lord Thespian's as a character. He was just amazing in this.
Actually, that was Gozel.
Lord Thespian, he doesn't say anything, but he's just so expressive in his body language.
Oh, that's right, he is there. I'm sorry. Yeah. I see what you're saying.
Yeah,
he's there. Yeah. Well, I actually have to say, I'm going to confess something. I actually, real quick, before I forget, we're not really going to talk about the leaked script at all, but I will say this. I had nightmares after I read it. I had horrible, horrible nightmares.
Messed up.
I may not have gone to see the Prince Caspian nine times, but I think the fact I had nightmares does show that I am a fan. Okay, just so you know, horrible dreams. You don't want to hear them. You don't want to hear them.
I'm missing something. Nightmares about what?
Nightmares about Voyage of the Dawn Treader script.
Oh,
I had horrible
okay.
nightmares about it. Twice as bad as
I didn't, because I knew it was completely unfinished and probably didn't reflect at all what was going to be in
But still
I slept perfectly.
Okay, can I say right here, during this scene when I first saw them lift up the wooden piece there and you see the, you know, carving, I burst out laughing because I read it and I misread what it said. I thought it said, "You were right to fear me," and then with an R carved in the bottom for Reefy Chief. And I thought, oh, that's hilarious. It's just, it's like a Zorro kind of thing. But then I read, oh, okay, it's supposed to be a serious thing. You were right to fear the woods, X. But
I thought it was kind of cheesy almost. I didn't really think of Zorro until, like, you know, second or third.
Well, when I thought it said R for Reaping Chief, I definitely
thought
of Zorro. Oh. Like, you were right. The line, "You were right to fear me," never came into the movie. So I was always waiting for that line. So I see the text, "You were right to fear." I thought, oh, "You were right to fear me." And that's what Reaping Chief put down, you know, as if the whole army's there and they all know about Reaping Chief because he thinks he's more famous than he is. But that was just something that I noticed for myself. It was kind of funny that I had that response, but. Anyway, next scene. Aslan's Hal. Let's see. Who wants to give the recap?
Great.
Who has the script open?
I do.
Warrior, do you have it open?
Yeah.
Okay, do you want to go ahead and give the recap of this scene?
Okay, the Narnians are led by Peter and Caspian, and they walk through the forest. They see Aslan's Hal and centaurs stand at the entrance and are raising their swords. Caspian stops, lets Pevensies go first. Lucy smiles at a child centaur. That child centaur was weird, but anyway. holding a sword too low, and then it's propped up by that parent centaur, from what I gathered. They enter Aslan's Hal and find Narnians making weapons. Caspian picks up a torch, leads them down a dark tunnel. They see carvings on the wall showing the kings and queens of Narnia. I thought that was a nice touch.
A bit national treasure.
At the end,
that,
he lights fire.
That's like later on, but we'll get to that later.
So anyway, yeah. This was...
Sorry.
Okay, so anyway, well, yeah, thanks for the recap, and we'll... I mean, this scene was pretty short, not really a lot here, but I have to say, I know that the music has gotten some criticism for being overused. I think that if there is a time to use one of the old themes from the first film, this is definitely one of those scenes. And I thought it probably... I think the music was probably more powerful in use here than in, maybe it ever was before. At least that theme was before in the first film. But I thought it actually, I think they did a good job just setting up, well, what they wanted to do. Not, I didn't really enjoy the rivalry so much between Peter and Caspian, but I think this scene kind of set it up as, oh, okay, you know, Caspian all of a sudden sees all of his soldiers showing great reverence and honor to Caspian and Susan and Peter and Edmund and, I'm sorry, to Peter, Susan, Edmund, and Lucy.
If Evan sees.
And, I could have just saved 20 seconds of my life. And I think it's kind of, when I saw Caspian there, I thought, oh, poor Caspian.
Yeah, I love this thing. I think it's an opportunity
peace.
To see the Narnians, their reverence and their joy that the old kings and queens have returned. We don't get to see that much of it in the movie, which was a shame. It was such one of my favorite parts of the book is, you know, the idea of the kids coming back and the Narnians thinking of them as legendary figures. And this was a great scene to show that. And it's very appropriate that it leads right into the scene where they find the carvings on the wall, which is my favorite scene in the entire movie.
Mm. Really?
Oh,
and they bring back the Tumnus theme briefly.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
that was
yeah.
Great.
But you've got to have nice. Tumnus moment in there.
I think it would have been really cool if it had a Pauline Baynes illustration on the wall.
Well, that would
have been good.
That would have been nice. So, but yeah, I think when they walk into the, you know, the stone table room and the fire goes around, that's my favorite moment in the movie, just because that's the theme of the book in a nutshell right there, of the myth becoming fact. And visually, I think it's very exciting, and it's just, the music's very powerful, and I think this is my favorite scene out of the first two films.
I think it's
easily.
I think it's kind of interesting because, like you talked about, myth becoming fact. They realize they are myths, in Narnia.
Exactly.
And they walk in and they see themselves on a wall. It's sort of, huh.
And it's that's the strangeness of that is what I always loved about the book. And I think they capture it. It's in the book, it's the Cair Paravel scenes that really do that. It's the strangeness of coming back and finding the years have passed. And it's kind of familiar, but totally different. And they really capture that in this scene right here, I think. And that's why I loved it so much. This scene right here embodies what I love about the book so much.
And I love how they have a carving of Aslan right over the place where he came up, you know, when he first was resurrected. I love
really
that.
Cool. Was really neat how they got so many images from the first movie, you know, one that we just talked about where they're entering the How and they've got the centaurs not on either side. Then you've got, Aslan right where he stepped up at the end of the first movie.
Yeah. Hey, Warrior, you were going to say something, I thought?
Commenting on the carvings. I really love that scene, how it showed a bit of the Narnia throughout history, you know, touching a bit on what happened to Lion, the Witch in the Wardrobe. And I think I saw songs about the horse and his boy. I can't remember. But,
really? To watch for that.
No, I didn't see that.
Sorry.
Really looked.
I don't think I've looked closely enough.
I'm not saying it's not there. I never looked.
And just really like, the Aslan carving. It was just showed his majesty so well, like how he was in control.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was at the forefront of it all, that showed that, establishing that he was in control. And they really should listen and look for Aslan rather than, you know, get caught up in everything that's going on around them. Like, they have this focus on Aslan.
Yeah, I agree.
I think he also has some really good thoughts there.
On all levels, just, you know, the music, the cinematography, the set design, on all levels, I think this is the best scene in the movie.
Well, I'm not sure if I would... I'll have to watch it again. But, and really decide what is my favorite scene. I have a few favorite moments. As for a whole scene, this might be my favorite scene. I also like... I just like, because you don't get quite as much of the time, just because they restructured the story, the time with, you know, Trumpkin and the Pevensies. And just the one
That's
little
true.
Line, I thought they handled really well. You know, let me make sure. Okay. Where, of course, Truffle Hunter says, so what are they like? Complainers, stubborn as mules in the morning. So you like them? Fair enough.
Yeah.
I really thought that was a good setup for just kind of, okay. And just kind of encapsulating, yes, Trumpkin actually likes the Pevensies.
Right, that was really good for Trumpkin's character, and also it was another little opportunity to see the old Narnians, you know, reverence and just, you know, awe of the Pevensies. Are just so what are they like?
Oh, what they like?
Right.
That's cool.
Can I just say real quick? I actually noticed, maybe more the second time I watched it, if you look at Caspian and Peter, they're actually getting along very nicely in this play.
They're actually
talking to the guy, like battle plans and things. It's a sort of, this is, at least they're not always at each other's throats.
They don't really hate each other.
No.
In this scene, I guess so. Well, they aren't really talking to each other, you know, so I guess that's the reason.
But they're in awe of the situation.
What's that?
They're in awe of the situation.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, as they're walking, when you just see them all walking together.
Oh, I see.
All the carving.
I kind of get the impression that Peter's kind of sitting there, yes, and, you know, how's it going? My son, Caspian, you know, I don't know. Maybe I was just imagining it, but.
Yeah, you were imagining everything. This is all
The kiss is completely imagined. That's what I'm going to stick with.
Jumping.
Okay.
Do you want the blue piece of Turkish delight or the red piece of Turkish delight? No one else caught it. Thank you, Jim Fan. No one else caught it. Okay. So the next scene, battle plans at Aslan's How. Recap, blah, 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 blah.
Placeholder for, by the way, I think that's a placeholder for the crossbow scene.
Really? It might be.
I think so. That's where it would go if it was still there.
Oh, yes. That's true. That probably is where I
hadn't
tried
to protect
it.
They were the ones that alerted the guards or whatever?
The shooting match.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, Susan, what do you think about global warming? Hey, that's what it said. Okay, someone had an ingenious little banner with Caspian and Susan. So, Susan, what do you think about global warming? But anyway, you know this. You know this scene. Of course, Glumpuddle and I already did our little reenactment where Glumpuddle improvised on Peter's lines. But one thing, of course, that this is, I think, the first where they start to do the little Susan Caspian bit with, you know, Susan jumping to Caspian's defense and Caspian's going, has this like, oh,
he's
finally.
Like, oh, he likes my ideas. It was love at first sight.
Give me the glory.
But overall, okay, how do you think Peter came across in this scene? Because we saw, you know, we had our ideas of this scene before we saw it because part of it made it into one of the release clips. All we heard was he saying, our only hope is to strike them before they strike us. You know, there's always a first time. But I don't think he came across quite as bad because especially when you see that a lot of the Narnians are siding with Peter and there's different views even just within the Narnians. What did you guys think?
I agree with you. Still, Peter does seem to be coming across as, you know, kind of a jerk and kind of stuck up, but it wasn't as bad. And I like that they showed that there were differing views and that they weren't really sure what to do.
Where you got cut out there?
I thought showing Peter's, the way they changed Peter's character a bit, they show his impatience that he's not, ready to wait for Aslan to turn up. He wants to act now, and that came through quite well. He did seem a bit of a jerk, but I wasn't really fussed with it because it led to some good character development, even though it was quite different from the book in some ways. But then the books didn't have a whole lot of character development for Peter at times. Yeah. It's a tough one. Some parts I liked, some parts I was a bit iffy about.
Yeah.
It's interesting that, of course, Reepy Chief doesn't really say it but
interrupted the lady. She started.
Go ahead.
Okay.
All right. The connection's dropping out all over the place, so
that's
not sure who's talking.
I know.
Okay. So, go ahead and finish.
But,
we already started.
Okay. So Reepy Chief, I thought it was interesting that in the book, of course, Reepy Chief actually suggests, storming Miraz's castle. And they don't really come out and say that here, but he just says, I think you know where I stand on this, sire, and you take that to mean that, of course, I'm in favor of, going on the offensive and attacking the castle. So that was cool.
Obviously.
They had that in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think they wanted. I don't think they wanted.
Passive.
Right, but I don't think they wanted Reepy Chief to say, we should raid Miraz's castle. Obviously, that's the obvious solution.
Yeah, they wanted to be Peter's idea.
Like, it's terrible, at the end, and you want Peter to look like the bad guy.
Yeah, if Reepy Chief had done it, then everyone did it at the end. Reepy Chief, how could you? And we go, oh, that little mouse.
You
rebel. Ouch. Poor Reepy Chief. Yeah, let's make him the bad guy here. But,
anyway, I was just saying, I love the little conversation between Peter and Lucy. I love how she just kind of puts him in his place.
Oh yeah.
Kind of get to the heart of the matter. Like you forgot who really defeated the White Witch. It wasn't you, Peter.
Well, to me,
macho.
Yeah, that was I think that was a good line just on Lucy's part with her character there. And I have to
say,
I knew that and I think if you try to, think about it, it's fairly obvious that the Night Raid's going to fail. But the line that really sort of, where I've started to say, oh no, this is going to be bad, is the scene where Glenn Storm says, or die trying. And just the look on his face, I thought, this is not going to be good.
Yeah. Maybe you shouldn't do it. We have some considerations.
Let's vote.
Jordy Henley, of course. Well, Jordy Henley, of course, is awesome in this scene, I thought. She's awesome in every scene, but this scene in particular.
He just liked his hair.
Oh, yeah.
He was cool. He was very cool.
I think a lot of people aren't going to even recognize her when the third film comes around. So she's grown up so much. But okay.
Yeah. Oh, is this the scene where Lucy's sitting on the stone table?
Yes, it is.
Like, Lucy, how could you?
Oh, yes. This is
I didn't like that.
Yeah, this is an issue that I'm surprised hasn't come up. And just one of those things, I guess, where all the other issues have kind of pushed
it
aside. But yeah, in the book, they do, you know, talk about not using it as a proper table. However, in this scene, I think they were trying to mirror the end of Line the Witch and the Wardrobe, where Susan and Lucy stood on the stone table. And the fact that, you know, they are the ancient kings and queens, and she has a closer connection to the table than the others. I think that, I guess I would prefer it not be in there, but I think there is some, you know, it's not completely out of place.
I still don't think she would have sat on it.
Yeah, I just think that they really wanted to remind people of the scene from Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. You know, it could be, you know, I think, and in the book, of course, ideally they would have, you know, candles sitting out, and they have pens and ink and maps spread out and things like that. And, of course, they didn't have that at all in this scene. But still, I see what you're saying. And I don't think it is at all inappropriate to say later with Peter and Lucy sitting on it together talking. But, yeah, I think now that I hadn't really thought of that at all. I did think it was a little odd she was lying on it the way she was, but
yeah, I guess I would have liked it if they had it out, but it's not something like I remember. Actually, I had posted a thread, you know, long before we saw any footage or anything, saying, you know, what if, you know, what if they actually do use the table for that, and
got buried,
and I was completely against it, of course, but somehow this didn't seem like that big of a deal to me. Like I'm able to look past
like
it. It just
your fights, right?
What's that?
I guess it's pick and choose your fights, right?
I can't hear what was being said at all.
Sorry.
She said, I guess you pick and choose your fights.
Yes, okay. Yeah. I heard that one. Okay.
It's kind of like...
But is the scene where, yeah, this is the scene where Lucy's lying on the table?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Can I just give my thoughts quickly?
Sure.
Possible?
Of course. That's all right.
I thought at first that she was showing it like a... At first, I was shocked. I was like, oh, Lucy, get off the stone table. Don't you know what that represents or whatever? Then I was thinking, oh, it might be in there to show her closeness to Aslan and his cause. So it took me a bit to think that through, but I got to the point where that's actually quite clever bit of symbolism, I guess you could say, if it wasn't meant to be implying that, but at first I was a bit shocked that she was sitting on the stone table.
So you didn't like
it? I got
it.
Over that.
You didn't like it at first, but do you actually like it now?
I like it now, but at first I was like, oh, that's so disrespectful.
Somehow actually sitting on it, like the way that she is at least, seems different than like what they talk about in the book, where it's like they would not use it for any common use. Like if they were using it to like put a lamp on or eat dinner on or something, obviously that'd be terrible. But
yeah.
I didn't think this had this. I don't think this had nearly the same effect as what Lewis is talking about in the book.
Yeah, agreed.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So we'll forgive her.
Yeah,
right.
it's sort of like
I can pass it.
You know, I was on the I was on web forums and things when The Lord of the Rings was coming out, and one of the issues that wasn't really raised very much was the fact that Éomer didn't really fight at Helm's Deep like he did in the book, and I guess it's the same situation here because in the commentary. Friend Wallace says, hey, Peter, did you notice no one really raised a fuss about, you know, him not being there? And Peter says, it's because of all our greater sins that we're preoccupied. So. Well, this has been a good little session, everyone, and we'll continue later, I guess, with the night raid.
Before we go, I don't think we can finish talking about this scene without mentioning the part where Patter Twig says, we could collect nuts.
Oh, yes!
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then says, no, throw them in the Telmarine.
Shut up. I love
which
that.
Is like the, which is like the fourth time in the movie they say shut up, but whatever. That was really, really fun. It was cool to see Reaper Cheap and Pattern Twig. It was kind of cool to see them clash.
I liked it because actually...
two completely different characters.
The first time I saw it, I thought Reaper Cheap was actually agreeing with him because it seemed like kind of thing, yes, and throw them in the Telmarines. And then, of course, you realize that he's actually smarter than that, but... The first time I saw it, I thought, oh, he actually likes the idea.
Yeah, that always gets a big laugh in theaters.
Yeah, it does.
The shut-up lines do get big laughs.
Even though they didn't really use it that much back then, but anyway.
Is it in the book?
Well, back in Narnian times, they did. That age at
it's a different world.
Narnian times could be any time. They're not bound by any time frame.
Okay.
Yes, they exist.
What did you say? Did you say Narnia doesn't exist?
Blasphemer.
I think she said that.
Oh, yeah. Santa Claus isn't real either.
Well, Father Christmas is real, though. Father Christmas is
in
real.
In Narnia, he is.
Yeah, of course.
He lives in Narnia.
Yes.
Obviously, he doesn't live here. He lives in Narnia.
Apparently not. Not according to our satellite imaging. Let's just hope they never have satellite imaging in Narnia. Dash all our little myths to pieces. Okay. Well, guys, this is great. I look forward to discussing the Night Raid with you.
Sounds good.
All right.
That's all for now. Next time we'll be discussing the Night Raid. And until next time, I'm your host, Julian. Thanks for listening.